Today, sharing the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Gittin Daf Nun Hey. We're learning today Le'ilu Nishmas Jack Starr, Yaakov Ben Shlomo, and also Morton Schwartz, Menachem Mendel Ben Avigdor Halevi. All the shows we learned for should have an aliyah from our learning. Okay, we begin four lines on the top on Nun Hey Omen Aleph with the brand new Mishnah. The Mishnah begins and tells us, again, continuing in this discussion that we've been having about Mivnei Tikkun HaOlam, we'll see that there are several things in this Mishnah that are also Mivnei Tikkun HaOlam, and that's why these series of Mishnayos are all together. So, Heyed Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada, he was one of the Tanoim, he testified on about a certain situation where a Chareshes, ala Chareshes, Shehisiya Avia, that her father married her off. Now, father has the right to marry off his daughter when she's still a Ketana or a Nara, before she's a Bogeres, he's allowed to marry off Midaraisa. So while a Chareshes is normally not considered to be a woman who's a Pikris, and therefore would not be able to be married on a Daraisa level on her own, but if her father marries her off, she's married on a Daraisa level. So the father married off this Chareshes when she wasn't a Bogeres, and therefore, in this situation, Shehi Yotza Beget. Even here, the husband is allowed to divorce her, even though she's married on a Daraisa level, and she doesn't have Das, technically, so she can't accept her get. Mid Daraisa, the husband has the right to divorce her. And the Gemara will explain this a little bit more in detail, but basically, a woman can be divorced mid Daraisa without her being a willing participant. And therefore, even though this Chareshes doesn't have Das, at least on a Daraisa level, she is able to be divorced even if she has no Das. Again, Midrabanan, we no longer allow that, as we'll see as we discuss this in the Gemara. Then the Mishnah continues and tells us, Akitana Bas Yisrael, if a girl who was a Ketana is married off by her father, so she would be a woman who is fully married. However, here we're dealing not with a Ketana that was married off by her father, but as the Mishnah tells us, we're dealing here with a Ketana that's a Yisoma. V'hi Yisoma, her father never passed away. The lo havu nisuan ela midrabanan. The Torah doesn't give the mother or the brothers a halachic right to marry off midraisa, but the rabbis came along and said this woman is never going to be left all by herself to fend for herself, and that could be unfortunately leading to immorality. So therefore, the rabbis gave the mother and the brothers, the older brothers, the right to go and marry her off, and this therefore is a marriage midrabanan. So when this Ketana Bas Yisrael gets married midrabanan, and she nieces the Kohen, and she's married to a Kohen, so then Shalcheles Mitruma, the rabbis gave her the right to eat Truma. Now this obviously, as Rashi points out, is Truma midrabanan, as Rashi clearly says in Dibur HaMascho, Shalcheles Mitruma, this is talking about Truma midrabanan, Bahani Nisun, which were only Dirabanan Nisun, below Gazrin and Midian. We don't make exams, if we allow you to go and eat Midrabanan Truma, then you can eat the Raisa Truma. Here the rabbis didn't make any such gezerah. So this woman who's married Midrabanan to a Kohen is allowed to go and eat Truma, albeit only Truma Midrabanan. And likewise, Vimesa, if she dies, Ba'alo Yorsha, her husband will inherit her. Because we do consider this on a Darbanan level a full marriage. Okay. Then the Mishnah tells us another great takana, the al hamarish, if a person stole, hamarish agazul, if a person stole a beam, and what did he do with it? Shebino vabira, and he built it into a tower, he built it into a big house, a mansion. So, for example, if a person stole the brick, and he puts it at the bottom of the Empire State Building, and the only way he can take out the brick is if you have to knock down the entire Empire State Building. So, in this situation, you have the object extant, and normally when you steal something, and if the object is still around, there's a chiv to go and return that exact object, not its value, but that exact object to the original owner. Hashem tishivenu. You have to go and give back what you stole. Im gonov yigonev meimo. So you have to go and give it back to him. So in this situation, the rabbis instituted what's famous, takonis morish, which is sheyitol is dava. We don't make the person actually give back the beam that's built into the mansion, because he'd have to destroy the whole mansion to give back that beam. But the beam is worth $10, so we say you just have to give back the value of the beam, the $10, even though the beam is still extant. And if you stole somebody's suitcase, so you'd have to give him back the suitcase. You can't say, well, the suitcase is worth $10, I'll give you $10, I like the suitcase, I'm going to keep it. No, you have to give him back the suitcase. So here, the rabbi said, well, technically you should have to give back that beam. We're not going to make you give back the beam, because if people people know that they're going to suffer a huge financial loss. They have to knock down the whole house. They're not going to return the beam. They're not going to do tshuva. So therefore, in this situation, the rabbi said, in order to facilitate people doing tshuva and returning the value, at least, of the lost money, so they said it's acceptable to return the value, even if the actual beam itself is extant. And finally, the mission concludes and tells us, Yal chatos ha-gizula. If a ganav was makdish an animal as a chatos for a sin that he did. So let's say the ganav ate chaylub by accident, so he has to bring korban chatos. He steals an animal and brings that as his korban chatos. But al chatos like zula shelo no dal rabbit. Nobody else knew about this. The kohen found out about it, but nobody else knew about it. So in this situation, she mekaperes. The rabbis instituted that this stolen chatos will be able to bring a kapara to the thief who actually stole this chatos, and the Gemara will explain why. Our Mishnah just tells us mipnei tikkun hamizbeach, for the benefit of the mizbeach, that in this situation the mizbeach should not be empty, and we'll discuss how exactly this occurs when we learn this in the Gemara. Okay, let's start off with the Gemara. Amar Rava, Rava says, may do so Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida, from the testimony that we have in the very first part of the Mishnah from the Tana Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida, that if a chareishes is married off midaraisa when she's a ketana or a nara, so in this situation, even though she's not a pikachas, even though she doesn't have das, by definition this chareishes can't speak and can't hear, so she doesn't have das, nevertheless she can be divorced. So Rava tells us, based upon this, if a man were to say to the Edom, Amali Edom, Ru'u ge ze, see this get, Shani Nozila, that I'm about to give to my wife, and I want you to realize, this is what I'm giving to my wife. And then, V'chazar v'yamala, and then when he gives this get, which is a real get, to his wife, he tells her, oh, listen, honey, kinsi shtar choze, this is an IOU that I'm giving you. So please accept this IOU that I'm giving you. Now, he's just really too embarrassed to divorce her. So therefore, he wants to divorce her, but he doesn't want to have the emotional breakdown that's going to be there if he gives her the divorce document. So he makes it up. It says this is a shtar chov. In this situation, Rava tells us, Hare zu migoreshes. We don't consider this a retraction when he tells her it's a shtar chov. No, this is still the get that a husband gives to his wife to divorce his wife. Now, Milo Amar Rav Yochanan ben Gudgida. What's Rav's reasoning? He said, didn't Rav Yochanan ben Gudgida say that lo bo'inan daita? He said that even though this chareishes doesn't have das, the husband can still divorce her. She's married on the raisa level, and even though she doesn't have das, the husband can divorce her. What must that be? Because you don't require das. So to over here, hachanami, lo bo'inan daita. In the case that we just brought down, that if a man says to the witnesses, this is the gift of my wife, and then he tells his wife, it's just the shtar chov that I'm giving you, so it is a valid get, because she doesn't need das. And therefore, even though she thinks she's getting a shtar chov, she accepted it, it's in her possession, so now she is a divorced woman. Gemara says, you know, pshita, isn't it obvious? The man gave her a get, it was written lishma, it was a totally, a perfectly kosher get, and gave it to his wife. So what if he told her it's a shtar chov? How does that impact anything? Because after all, he can give it to a bal korcha. So he says, no, I might have thought, ma'o d'teima, kivan d'omar, kinsi shtar chov zeh. Since he told his wife, go and take in this shtar chov, this IOU that I'm giving you. So you might have thought, bitule, batle, that in fact we're going to say that she is not getting a get, she's getting no longer a get, because he was mavatal to get by calling it a shtar chov. And therefore, Gomash Malon, so the Chiddush of it is that in Iso de Batle, if in fact he really did want to be Mavatalit, which as we learned early in the Masechta, before it comes into the possession of the wife or the wife's Shaliach, so in Iso de Batle, if he wishes to nullify it, Gizun Tehate, all he has to do, Le'edim Hava Omerlu, he would just have to tell the Edim that he wishes to go and nullify it, and that would be fine, and we learned early in the Masechta. Hi, the Kamar Hachi, so that why did he tell it to her? He wasn't really being Mavatalit, it's Mishum Kisufa. He was embarrassed that he's going to divorce his wife, and he didn't want to get into a fight with her, and he knew she'd be very emotional about it, and it would end up getting him emotional. So he said, listen, here's your IOU, and bottom line is she's divorced, and when she does eventually open it up and read it, and he's not there with her, it won't be as difficult, and as painful, and as embarrassing. Okay. Then we quote the Mishnah, it said in the second part of the Mishnah, Al-Ketana Bas Yisroel, and that the father married off his daughter while she was a ketana, which he has the right to do. So the Mishnah said, in this situation, she was married to a kohen, shochelz v'truma, that we allow it to eat midrabanan, truma derabanan. The im neisa bala yorsha, and if she in fact dies, the husband inherits her. Now the Gemara starts and tells us v'ilu chareishes lo ochla. It specifically told us over here a ktana. Now the Reish was talking about a chareishes. So Rashi points out the fact that we now talk about a ktana specifically tells us that we're not dealing with the chareishes. Only the ktana can go eat truma mid rabbanan. V'ilu chareishes would not be allowed to eat truma mid rabbanan lo ochla. So Gemara says, my taima, what's the reasoning that the chareishes isn't allowed to eat truma derabanan? The ktana can eat truma derabanan, so why can't the chareishes eat truma derabanan? It's the same derabanan marriage as the ktana, so how come the ktana can go eat truma, but we don't derabanan, and we don't allow the chareishes to eat truma derabanan? So the Gemara says, my taima, what's the reason? Because you know what's going to happen? Then a cheresh, who is a kohen, is going to come to give his wife this chereshes truma, and that would be a problem. Mor says, why is that a problem? Let her go and eat it, because after all, even though his marriage to her is only on the rabbanan level, and therefore we have to be concerned that maybe he may give her truma daraisa, and that his marriage midrabanan wouldn't allow her to go and eat truma daraisa. So that's why, in this situation, we do not let the chareishes go and eat truma, even though it's only midrabanan. Gemara says, why not? The lechol, we'll let her eat it. Worst comes to worst, let's say this chareish husband actually gave a truma daraisa, and certainly if he gives a truma derabanan, katan ochel nevelusu. It is not a problem, because she technically has the status of being a ktana. She is la bar das. She's a chareishes. And therefore, if you see a katan eating the velos, you're not obligated to stop. You shouldn't go and feed a katan treif with your hand. And in fact, we do recommend stopping him from eating treif if you can. But technically, there is no chiv on based in to stop a katan from eating the velos, from eating non-kosher, because he's technically not mitzuva at that point in time. So therefore, even if this chareishes were to go and eat truma daraisa, nishke ferluch, because katan ochel the velos, she has the same status as the katan eating the velos. And therefore, even if she eats truma, since she's lava bar das, and thus, there is technically not a problem if she were to go and eat truma, even if it's truma daraisa. So Gemara says, no. Yizera, the real reasoning is, Shema Yachel Cheresh Bipikachas. We're concerned over here that the Cheresh is going to go feed a Pikachas. Now this Pikachas certainly is forbidden to go and eat Truma. And since this is only a marriage derabanan, here we have to be concerned that the Cheresh may end up giving her Truma Doraisa, which would be a capital crime. Misa Bidei Shemayim, if you go and eat Truma when you're not allowed to. And therefore, to make sure that this Pikachas doesn't go and Rechmon Litzlan eat Truma, so therefore, Truma Daraisa, so therefore, we don't allow the Chereshes to go and eat Truma, even though we allow the Ketana to go and eat Truma. So where it says, at least though, Vlecho B'Truma D'Rabbanan, let her at least eat Truma D'Rabbanan, because there is no problem with that. So where it says, no, there is. Gizera, Shema Osi Lechule B'Truma D'Raisa. If you allow her to eat Truma D'Rabbanan, before you know it, she's going to end up eating Truma D'Raisa as well, and therefore we have to make this a concern. As opposed to, by the Ketana, the rabbis didn't feel that such a Gizera was necessary. Okay, Gemara continues and quotes the Mishnah. It says, V'Al HaMorish, Gozul Shebino, that if you stole this bean, this morish, this is famous takonis morish, so then we don't make you pay back the actual bean, but we allow you to pay back the money. So we learn this in the price as well. Tana Rabbanan. Gozul morish ubino bebira. If a person stole a bean and he built it into his house, into his palace, into his tower, so Beshamayomim, in fact, Nikakeya kol habira kula. You have to go and knock down the entire building to go get to that bottom bean. And therefore, you're going to suffer a huge loss. And you have to go and actually return that actual bean that you stole, because that's the halacha. If the item that you stole is extant, you have to go and return it. So here, the bean is extant, so you have to go return it. That's Beis Shammai's strict opinion. They still disagree. They still omrim, ain lo elo demei morish bavad. All he has to do is go and give back the value of that bean. It was $10, so he has to go give $10, and he therefore is considered that he gave back the amount that he stole to the person who he stole it from. And this is called Mishum Takonas HaShavim. This is to facilitate people from doing tshuva. If somebody says, listen, it's a $10 loss, I'm willing to accept that to do tshuva, fine. But he says, $1 million loss, I got to knock down the whole building, it's not going to be so quick to do tshuva. So therefore, Mishum Takonas HaShavim, to go and encourage people to do tshuva, that's similar to Tikkun Olam. So that's why this is here. So therefore, that is the real reason why Takanas Morish was instituted. Then we quote the Mishnah, which said, "Balachatos Hagzula V'chule." We said that if a person stole an animal and then he brought it as a chatos, and it wasn't publicly known to the rabbim, shlo nodas the rabbim, so it does bring a kapara to this ganav. And again, mipnei tikkun hamizbeach. And I will explain that. And this will actually be a machlokas between Ula and Yehuda. So first we give Ula's opinion. Amar Ula, Ula says that min haTorah dvar Torah bein noda ve'lo noda ein mechaperes. That Ula says whether the public knows about it or whether the public doesn't know that this was a stolen chatos. The bottom line is min haTorah ein mechaperes. Since it's a stolen item, you can't get kapara with it. So this ganav, who really has to bring a chatas, he ate chela by accident, and he stole this animal to go bring it as his chatas, will not, min haTorah, get kapara. Ein mechaperes. And the reasoning is, my taima, because yeyush kedi, lo kani. Because all you have over here is yeyush, that the original owner had given up hope of getting it, but there really is no change in the, there's no shinui in the balam over here, because he stole this animal and didn't really make an acquisition in this animal. So therefore, there's only yeyush. So yeyush kidi lo kani. Just yeyush alone isn't going to go and make the kinyan. As Rashi says, the divas yeyush kidi, yeyush levado below shinui rishus achar hayesh. There was no shinui rishus after the yeyush. When he stole it, it's in his possession already. And you need the shinui rishus to come after the yeyush. So in this situation, technically, the ganav doesn't own it. And therefore, if he's mekadesh it, so it cannot bring him a kapara. However, the rabbi said that in our Mishnah, umatam amru lo nodo mechaperes, if nobody knows about it, it is in fact mechaperes. That's not the din d'oraisa. The rabbi said it's mechaperes. Shelo yu kohanim atzevim. So the kohanim shouldn't be sad because the kohanim ate this. Kohanim are allowed to eat. The Pirkei Kohanim are allowed to eat a carbon chatas. So the kohanim are going to eat this chatas. They're only going to find out that it really wasn't a carbon. So then they're eating chulin biazara. So that's a real problem, and therefore the Kohanim are going to be upset. So that's Ula's reasoning. Mori questions this and says, Amri le Rabbanan Ula. Rabbanan said to Ula, so then why did it say Takanas HaMizbeach? V'anam it may tikkun HaMizbeach Tanan. But that's not the reason. It's so that the Kohanim should be sad. What does that have to do with the Mizbeach? So Ula says, no, that's exactly it. Amar lahem. Ula told the people to question him, and he said, Kivan the Kohanim HaTzevim Nimtzo Mizbeach Batal. Since the Kohanim are going to be very sad because they'll have eaten chulam biazara, you know what? The next time they're not going to eat it so fast. They're going to want to check it out. And before you know it, there's going to be a lot of meat left over, no sir. And that's going to be also an isser. So therefore, the Kohanim are going to be very sad because they're not going to want to go and eat korbanos unless they're 1,000% sure that it belonged to the owner. And as a result, there's going to be a lot less korbanos. And therefore, the mizbeach is going to be sad, and that's what it meant, ibnei tikkun ha-mizbeach. So that's Ula's understanding of this din. On the other hand, Rav Yudam, I review this, says that min haTorah, dvar Torah, bein nodo, bein lo nodo, mechaperes, that this stolen animal, whether it's known that it was a stolen animal or it wasn't publicly known that it's a stolen animal, in fact, it does provide a kapara to the ganav when he brings it as a chatos. Why is that? My taima, because yeyush kedi kani. Because even though there was only yeyush, there was no shina rishus, there was no change in the ownership, because the yeyush came after the ganav already took it into his possession, so therefore there was only yeyush kedi, but he holds, Yehuda holds, that yeyush kedi is kani, that in fact does go and bring about a kapara. Now, we turn to Nunhei Amud Beis, and the Gemara continues and says, Umatam Amru Nodo in Mekaperes. And why did the rabbis in Mishnah state that if it was known to the public, then, in fact, Ein Mekaperes, it's not going to give a kapara, because Shelo Yomru Mizbeach Ochel Gizelos. Because you know what people are going to say? Hey, that was a stolen animal. God likes stolen animals. Oh, that's the Mizbeach is eating stolen stuff. So in order to go against that, so even though min hadin, yeyush kini is enough, you just have yeyush kidi, and it is kone. So in this situation, the rabbi said no, because it's going to cast aspersions on the mizbeach. Kam yochel and kan kodesh baruch hu. Shlo yomu mizbeach ochel gzeilus. That God likes robbery, and that the mizbeach likes robbery. Okay, so that's Rav Yehuda's reason. So we have Ula's reason, and we have Rav Yehuda's reason. We are now questions the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda. This is the Amora, Rabbi Yehuda, that we just mentioned. So, Bishlam Ali Ula, everything fits in very well according to Ula, because the bottom line is, Min HaTorah, it's not Mechaperes. And over here, that's why it specifically tells us, Hainu Diktani Chatas, because it had to mention a Chatas as opposed to an Ola, because the Chatas is eaten. And therefore, the Kohanim will be sad that they ate inappropriately Chatas. If it was an Ola that had been mentioned, so the Kohanim wouldn't be sad, and they wouldn't have applied this Tikkun HaMizbeach. So therefore, going to Ula makes very good sense. Hainu Diktani Chatas, that's why it specifically said a Chatas and not an Ola. Ela Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the reasoning is so that people shouldn't say Shlo Yomru Mizbeach Ochel the Gezelos? So what difference does it make if it's a Chatas or Nola? Why did we specifically mention a Chatas over here and not a Nola? Eli Rav Yehuda, Ma'ir Yechatas Afilu Ola Nami. So the understanding of a Chatas works out very well according to Ula, because again, you need to tell me that the Kohanim are going to be upset because they ate it. They don't need a Nola. That's what had to say specifically a Chatas. But according to Rav Yehuda, so then you could have mentioned either an Ola or a Chatas. Why do you bedavka mention a Chatas? So the Gemara answers, on behalf of Rav Yehuda, lo meboyakara. What Rav Yehuda is saying over here is that it's not necessary to say this, and yet it says that. So, lo meboy, you didn't have to tell me the case of an Ola, because the kolilhi, an Ola is totally going up on the Mizbeach, and therefore the Kohanim get nothing from it. And therefore, one can understand people saying that Shelo Yomu Mizbeach Ochel Gzelos. Oh, the Mizbeach is eating a lot. And therefore, that would be a reason that we wouldn't want to have, if it was well known to the public, a Ola that would be bringing atonement. Ela Afilu Chatas Nami. But the Chiddush is that even a Chatas, which is mostly eaten by the Kohanim, the chaylev, the dam, only the chaylev, the sacrificial fats, and the blood that has the zrika done to it, only these, who, the solid l'gabim zeach. That's a small percentage of the animal that goes on the zbeach. The idach, kohanim achlilei, the rest of the carbon, the kohanim get to eat it. And therefore, I might have said that in this situation, the concern about Shelo Yomru Mizbeach Ochel Gezelis doesn't really apply, because the Mizbeach is eating a trivial amount, a very small amount, a little bit of sacrificial fat and a little bit of blood. And therefore, the rabbis had to say, in our Mishnah, Ilu Hachi Gazor, Shelo Yomru Mizbeach Ochel Gezelis, even this small amount, people are going to cast aspersions on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rechman Hassan, on the Mizbeach, say, oh yeah, it doesn't eat a lot, but it still eats our stuff up. And therefore, to prevent this, Rav Yehuda said, Shelo Yomru Mizbeach Ochel Gzelos, even for a Chatas. Where it still questions Rav Yehuda's understanding. Tanan, our Mishnah, we learned in our Mishnah, Al Chatas HaGzula Shelo Nodo L'Rabin. If the Chatas was brought by this person who stole it, so then, if it's not well known to the public, so we said, Ad Shelo Nodo L'Rabin, it is able to be giving a kapara. In order to facilitate the korbanos to be brought on the mizbeach, so therefore we in fact give a kapara as long as it's not well known. So again, bishlam ula, according to Ula, this works out very well. Nicha, because Ula's rationale is again yeyush kadi lo kani, and therefore in this situation he's not kone it, and therefore the kadim are going to be very sad because they ate chulim ba'azara. So therefore we understand everything well according to Ula. Elul Rav Yehuda, according to Rav Yehuda, if Chomibayle, why did our Mishnah say, Mipnei Tikkun HaMizbeach? No, it should be the opposite. It should have said, the Yochim Ben Gudga, he said, he was made, that if somebody stole a Chatas, and it is well publicized, it is known, so then in that situation, you're not allowed to go and get a kapara from it. So therefore, the way it's written is not exactly in accord with Rav Yehuda's understanding. So we have a kasha, if chama boyle. So the Gemara says, hochanami kama. No, that's what the Bryce is really telling us. The Bryce is really missing some words. And it's really saying, lo, no, da. If nobody knows about it, so then, micha peris. It does have the ability to atone. The ganav who stole it has the ability, when he brings his carbon, to get a kapara for the chatas that he's really obligated to bring. Separate from his stealing, he ate chayla by accident, so he has to bring chatas. And the reason for this is, b'nei tikkun ha-mizbeach, in order that people not say, ah, the Mizbeach loves to eat stolen property, and that's why this guy gave it, it's stolen property. So therefore, that's the Chiddush over here, Mipnei Tikkun HaMizbeach, so as long as it's not well known, so people won't say it. And therefore, if it's not well known, there's no concern of Yomru Mizbeach Ochal Gezelis, and that's why you're allowed to go and bring it. Okay. Now the Gemara goes, and once again, tries to attack Ula's position. Again, Ula says that the Kohanim shouldn't be at Suvim. So, Masiv Rabba says, in the following, based upon the following mission, Bava Kama, where it says, Ganav, if a person stole a sheep or a goat, if you steal a sheep or a goat, you have to pay Dalid. If you steal a cow, you have to pay hay. So sheep or goat, you pay four times. For a cow, you pay five times. And the din is, if you were Ganav, if a person stole it, so then he's Chayv Kefel, and then he normally, if he were to go and shecht it or to sell it to someone, so then he'd have to pay four, a total of four, the kefil plus an additional two for a goat or a sheep, and an additional three for a cow. The reasoning behind that is because the cow carries itself, and the sheep or the goat, you often have to carry it, so they made less of a penalty. In any event, Ganav, if this person stole the cow, and then the hikdish, he then was makdish it, he sanctified it to the base of Middash. The achar kach tavach u'mocha, and then either he sold it, or he shechted it. Now, if it had belonged all to the same person, without being makdish, he'd have to pay four or five, depending whether it was a sheep or a goat or a cow. But here, he stole it, then he was makdish it, and then he did the tricho mechira, and mishalim only tashlume kevel. He only has to pay the kevel from the original theft, because once he was makdish it, he doesn't have to go and pay the additional two or three, the Dalit v'hei, total. Now, why is that? The Tani Allah, the Bryce explaining this Mishnah, said, Bachutz, when you are outside the Azara, in such a case as we had over here, where you are doing the Shechita outside the Azara, so you are Chayiv Kares. Now, the Amris Yeyush Kidi Lokani, if you're telling me that it's the person who stole this, so he never really acquired it, like Ula had said, you have Yeyush is not enough in this situation. You need a Shina Rishus after the Yeyush. And here there was no Shina Rishus after the Yeyush. So therefore, if you're going to tell me, like Ula said, that this is not really belonging to the Ganav, and that's why it doesn't get an atonement, and the rabbis came along only and said that you get an atonement, because otherwise the Kohanim will be at Suvim, and they ate Chulim B'Azara. So in this situation, if you're telling me that we're paskin like Ula, so then why is there an ownership of Kares? Kares, my avidite. What is Kares doing over here if he doesn't really own it? So then he couldn't have consecrated it. And if he can't consecrate it, so how can there be shrut echutz that he would be chayiv Kares for? So the word says, Omer Shizbi, listen to this. Or Shizbi says, Kares mi div rehem. This is rabbinical Kares that we give this guy. Kares mi div rehem. Now, many of you are scratching your heads probably this one, say, what in the world is that? And that's exactly what they said in the Beis Medrash. Achichu alei. In the Beis Medrash, the students started to laugh at Rosh Hizbi and said, hey, that's impossible. There is no such thing as Kares Midireya. Kares Midireya Miika, is there such a thing as Kares given by a person? Kares is given by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's a premature death. Only a Kodesh Baruch Hu can do it. If a person does it, so it's either called Mises Basin if he did it with the understanding of the Basin, or it's called murder. So therefore, that can't be the correct understanding of Rosh Hizbi. So therefore, Amalu Rava, Gavra Rabba, Amar Milsa, such a great person, like Rav Shizbi said this, Lo Sechuku Allah, don't laugh at him, because it's a very good explanation for what he said. And what is that very good explanation? So Rav explains, it's because Kares Sha'ayidei Divreyem Baslo, not that the rabbis can give Kares. Kares means the death from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it can't be, obviously, that a human being gives somebody Kares, but the rabbis created this Kares prohibition. How did they do that? It came about Ayidei Divrehen Basalo, because Okmua Rabbonon Birishu Sei. So they gave the thief the Kayach, since Hefker based in Hefker, so they essentially gave this stolen item to the thief. Ki Hechi Delechayev Allah. So now, if he goes and does Shrutei Chutz outside the Beis HaMikdash, so if he's Makadish it, so it belongs to him. And if he does Shrutei Chutz outside the Beis HaMikdash, he'll be Chayiv Kares for Shrutei Chutz. So that's what Rav Shizbi meant when he says Kares Midivreyev. It's Kares that was caused by Dibur that the rabbis enacted, and therefore it made it into the thieves, and therefore when he was Makadish it, he does have the power to be Makadish it, and therefore, when he shechts it outside the Beis HaMikdash, he's chayav for Shrutei Chutz, which is an issur of Kares. Finally, Amar Rava says, Havadai komi boili, based upon what we just said in the name of Rabba, Rabba says, now I have a question. Ki okmur rabbanim birshusei, that which we said, that the rabbis gave this ganav, the koyach, that it belongs to him, from what point in time did that koyach come into place? When the rabbis, ki okmur rabbanim birshusei, they gave it into his rishus, did they do so mishas ganav from the earliest time when he stole it? Or omishas hektisha, when he was makdish it? Now, what's the nafkamina? Who cares? The bottom line is, it's his. No, there's a huge nafkamina. L'may nafkamina, l'gizoseha uvladoseha. If you go and say that it belongs to the Ghana from the Shas Geneva, that's when the rabbis gave him Rishus. So then from that moment and on, if it grows any new wool, or if it gives birth, so then he would be entitled to that because the rabbis gave it to him. But if you say only from the time of the hektish, so then from the time of the Geneva until the time of the hektish, any shearings that are done, or if the mother cow over here, let's say, gave birth to a baby cow, those vlados would belong to the original owner and not to the ganav. So that's Rava's question. Padai komi boili, mai, what is the halacha? So ultimately, Rav himself answered the question. Had amar Rava, mistabrit, makes good sense that it should be only mishas hikdesha, that the rabbis gave it over to him, because otherwise he would be gaining from owning it from the time of the hektish, and shlo yei chote niska. We don't want this chote, this sinner, this ganav, to benefit in any way, shape, or form, and therefore it only becomes his at the time of the hektish. Okay, next Mishnah. This Mishnah is going to introduce us to the Churban Bayis Sheni, and this will then, in tomorrow's shiur, the end of today's shiur, we're going to get up to the point of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. These are the famous Churban Gemaras that are learned in the upcoming Tisha B'Av, and that Emir Tzashem I'll be giving actually live on Tisha B'Av night at the Young Israel of Woodmere for anybody that wants to hear it at that point in time. Of course, we're going to be going through it from tomorrow's shiur for the next couple of days. In any event, this Mishnah begins. Lo haya sikrikun biYehuda baharuge muhammad. Now, what does this mean? So Rashi explains in the Ramask, lo haya sikrikun biYehuda. Who are these sikrikun? Sikrikun were of the kochavim rotzeach. These were murderers of the kochavim. Shenosin lo Yisrael karka befidyo nafsha. That a yid, in order to prevent himself from being murdered by these sikrikun, from these murderous goyim, would say, here, take my land. Just don't kill me. Yamalo. So the yid would tell the goy, saw karka zu, which is a nutricone, a mnemonic for sikrikon, saw karcha, karka zu. The al to me said, do not kill me. So the word sikrikon, Rashi tells us, means saw karka zu. In any event, so Rashi continues, baharugei hamochama, this is talking about Mochemes Titus, Shahis of Yerushalayim, the Titus who was the Caesar of the Roman Empire, attacked Yerushalayim and Yehuda, and where we'll explain what exactly this is referring to when it says that there was no din of Sikrikun, which we'll explain in a moment. There was no din of Sikrikun during this initial episode when Titus attacked Yerushalayim, Yehuda, and Klal Yisrael. Okay, now, the Mishnah continues and says, however, meharuge ha-mucham ve'elach, after that period of time, then there is this din, yesh bo Sikrikun, there is this din of Sikrikun. The Mishnah continues and tells us, Ketzad, describe exactly what you mean by the din of Sikrikun. So, for example, Lokach mi Sikrikun, if another Jew took this field that the Sikrikun had taken from the first Jew. So Reuven had the Sikrikun come and say, give us that field, we're going to kill you if you don't. And he said, sure, take this field, it's yours. So Reuven seemingly has given over the title to the Sikrikun. Then Shimon goes to the Sikrikun and buys the field from the Sikrikun. So in this situation, Shimon doesn't really own it because the Sikrikun didn't really own it. The Chazar, the Lokach, Mibal HaBayis. But in this situation, if Shimon went to Reuven and purchased it from Reuven, so now you might think he bought it from the Sikrikun and he bought it from Reuven, it should be his clear without any concerns. So the Mishnah tells us no, Mikcho Batel. His purchase from Reuven is Batel. Because in this situation, the original owner knows that the Sikrikun is going to start up with him if he says, no, I'm not selling it to you. So therefore, in order to keep on having his life preserved, that the Sikrikun is not going to come back to him and say, hey, I'm going to kill you because you're supposed to give me the land, and now Shimon won't purchase the land from me if he doesn't also purchase it from you, so I'm going to kill you, Reuven. So therefore, that's the only reason why Reuven said yes to Shimon, because he was afraid of the Sikrikun. But that's in a situation where Shimon first bought it from the Sikrikon, and therefore Reuven is now scared that if he says no, the Sikrikon is going to come back after him. However, that in that situation, Mikro Batel, the sale of Shimon purchasing it for Reuven was false deal. It really wasn't a deal, and he doesn't own it. However, if he first purchased it from Reuven, Shimon first went to Reuven and said, listen, you don't own this land anymore, the Sukrigan has it, but I'm willing to pay you something so I can now have title to it. So he purchased it first from Ibala Bayis, from Reuven, and then, because of Alokach B'Sekrikun, and then he goes to the Sekrikun and says, now I want to purchase it from you, and the Sekrikun is only too happy to sell it, so Nekochayim, in this situation, Shimon really does own the land, because he first purchased it from Reuven, and Reuven can't say, well, I was afraid of the Sekrikun. The Sekrikun wasn't selling it at this point in time, so therefore, there is nothing to have been afraid of, and if he said, yes, I'm selling it to you, he must have meant it. The Mishnah continues with a very similar din, albeit in a different application. If somebody acquired land that was nichse melug from the dowry that the man's wife had brought in, so somebody purchased that, and he then went to the wife and said, well, your husband didn't really have the full right to sell it, he only has the rights to the payers, now I want to buy the full rights from you. But first he went to the husband, and then he went to the wife, so mechel batel in this situation as well. Because just like in the case of Reuven being afraid of the Sekrikun, the wife is going to be afraid of her husband if she tells this guy, no, I don't want to sell it to you. So therefore, in this situation, it's a pressured sale and mechel batel. However, if the person, Shimon, let's say, went first to Reuven's wife, and he purchased the rights to the property from her. Now, the payros still belong to the husband. She doesn't have the right to sell that. But the property belongs to her, and he first purchased it from her. And then, because of Lokach Manish, and then he went and bought it from her husband. So in this situation, Mecho Kayim. Again, just like with the case of the Sekrikon, there was no reason the wife should have sold it if she didn't willingly want to sell it. So if you went to the wife first, if you went to the original owners before the Sekrikon took the property in the first case, there was no pressure on them. So if they sell it, they obviously meant it. Okay. In that situation, both scenarios, mechel kayim. If chazav alokach v'nish, mechel kayim. Okay, so first he bought it from the woman, then he bought it from the man, so therefore it's perfectly good. Then we continue discussing a little bit more about the Sekrikon, that which we said until now, zu mishnah rishonah. That was the original mishnah. Rebbe, when he wrote the mishnayis, so he often left things the way they originally were, even though subsequently the dinim were changed. So this was the din originally, this din that we mentioned in the early part of the mishnah, zu mishnah rishonah. However, based in Shalacharei Amamru, later on the based in changed this din, and they said, Halokeach mi Sekrikon, if anybody purchases something from the Sekrikon, so then, no sein la ba'alim revia, you have to go and pay the original owner 1/4 of the value. Now, teleologically speaking, this made good sense, because the Sekrikon would sell it at a discount. He was interested in selling it. He wasn't interested in farming. He was interested in getting the cash value for this field. So he'd be willing to sell it at a discount. That discount was usually sold it for 1/4 less. So therefore, the purchaser, let's say Shimon, buys it for the Sekrikon, buys it only for $7,500 instead of $10,000. So therefore, the extra money that he saved, he has to go give this quarter, no same level, all in revia. That makes it fair, because he paid for the fair amount of the field by paying 3/4 to the Sekrikon and 1/4 to the original owner. Now, Amosai, let's explain this further. This din that we just said is only true bisman she'ein v'yodun likach. If the original owners don't have the wherewithal, they don't have the finances to go and buy this field from the Sekrikon at 75% of the cost. However, if they do, avoyesh b'yodun likach, then we don't apply this din that we just said, and in fact, they have the priority over everybody else. Hein kodmin l'choladim. So nobody else should go and buy it from the Sekrikon. They should let the original owner go buy back his field from the Sekrikon. Now, the Gemara continues and tells us, Rebbe Hoshiv Beis Din, the Mishnah says that Rebbe appointed a Beis Din, v'nimnu, and they decided, she'moshoasa b'fnei Sekrikon, sh'temosa chodesh, that if a property hadn't been redeemed by the original owner and still was with the Sekrikon 12 months later. Again, the Sekrikon normally weren't interested in farming this field. They were interested in just stealing it, making a quick profit on it, selling it at a lower than its actual value, but getting all that money for free, so to say, because they didn't own it, the field. They just stole the field. And therefore, if it didn't get purchased by the original owner within 12 months, so Rebbe's based and said, Kol HaKodem Likach Zoche. Now, anybody has the rights after 12 months to go purchase the field, and Avol Nosi Labal and Bria, but they still have to give 1/4, but because they're still going to get it at a discount, so why should they profit? The original owner shouldn't lose out totally, so they have to give 1/4 to the original owner, and they pay 3/4 to the Sekrikon, and then they own the full field 100% themselves. Now, Mar starts off and explains the first part of the Mishnah. Hashna Barugia Muchama Lawyer Boss Sekrikon. If we're saying that during the time of the actual battle for Yerushalayim, the battle for Eretz Yisrael, with the Romans. If at that point in time there weren't any Sikrikon, so then certainly, it doesn't make any sense to say that afterwards there would be more Sikrikon. You would think that the Sikrikon would be there when the Jewish people were on the biggest threat, which was during the actual Chorba, but not afterwards. So it says, yes, you're 100% right, but that's not what we meant. Rav Yehuda, the Amora said, when the Mishnah said that there was no Sikrikon at that point when there was Haruge Muhammad, so lo danu ba din Sikrikon kamar. What it meant is not that there weren't any Sikrikos. Of course, there were people that were Nebuch, they were killing the Jews, so they're certainly taking their property. But this din of the Sikrikon that we mentioned in the Mishnah did not apply at that point in time. Now, the Amr Gassi, this is because Rav Asi said the way that the times worked was it was divided into three epochs, or three periods. So Gimel, Gezeros, Gazru, then Titus and his army, so they had three different times, different persecution of the Jewish people. So, the initial decree, Gazrasa Kamaisa, the first decree was called the Lokatil Liklu. They hated the Jews and persecuted the Jews so much, they said, if you don't kill a Jew, we're going to kill you. So that was the time that was really called the Harugi Muhammad. The Jews were being hunted left and right by everybody because the Goyim were under strict instructions to either kill the Jews or they would be killed themselves. And the second decree was Mitziyasa. That was called the Kotil Lese Arbazuze. They didn't say that it was you'd be killed if you didn't kill the Jew, but if you did kill a Jew, you'd only have to pay a fine of 4 zuz, a very minimal amount of money. Others have it that the Romans would pay you 4 zuz if you killed a Jew. But it still wasn't as bad as the first decree where they said, if you didn't kill a Jew, so then they would kill you. And finally, Basraisa, the third decree was later on. And it said, they called the Kotel Liktalu. Here, the Jews were somewhat protected, and anybody that killed a Jew would himself be put to death. Now, we therefore have these three gezeros. Hilkach, Kamaiso, and Tziyasa, the first one and the second one, when the Jewish people's blood was spilled very, very easily, and it wasn't worth a lot, so Kivan Dekotle, since the Goyim would kill the Jews without any concern. The first one, it was a mitzvah to kill them. You'd be killed yourself if you didn't. The second one was, according to some, you had to pay a small fine. According to others, you got a small amount if you killed a Jew. So, Agav Unse Gomar Umikne. So therefore, during this period of time, if Sikrikon came to you, so it was certainly something that you would be terrified about, and therefore this din of the Sikrikon would apply under these circumstances. However, in the latter period of time, when there was at least some theoretical protection of the Jewish people, Basraisa Amrei, at this point in time they said, Ha'idna Lishkol, I'll let them take my land today, because they're not going to kill me, but Lamachar Tavana Le'Bedina, but tomorrow, when the maybe more favorable to me, then I will go take him to court and get it back. Since they weren't afraid in this period of time that the Goyim would kill them, so therefore now the law of Sikrikon does apply. Because they really could argue and litigate at this point in time. They just were afraid to do it with the Sikrikon still, and therefore they rather would do it with the Yid who bought it from the Sikrikon. Okay. Now this will introduce us to the following statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, what does the pasuk mean when it says, "Ashri Adam Mefachi Tobid Umak Shelibo Yipol Biroah"? This is a pasuk for Mishlei, and the pasuk says that it's very good. It's praiseworthy for a person that always is constantly in fear. Mefachi Tobid. So the Mefarshim explained that this is talking about he's constantly afraid of doing a sin. But here we're not darshing it that way. Here we're saying that a person is afraid of what he does. And if a person toughens up his heart, he hardens his heart, so then he will end up falling down in wickedness. Now, what is this really telling us over here? So the Gemara says, this refers to three stories, Akamtsa, Ubar Kamtsa, Chorav Yerushalayim, because of the famous episode between Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa. The Marsha says that Kamtsa was the father, Bar Kamtsa was his son. Others suggest just two different Jewish people. So because of the fight that occurred, which we'll explain in tomorrow's shiur, Chorav Yerushalayim, that caused the destruction of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Because of Atar Negola Utar Negolta, because of the story that we'll have coming up in an upcoming shiur about a Tarnagol, a male Tarnagol, and a Tarnagolta, and a female Tarnagol, so the city of Tur Malka was destroyed. Charuv Tur Malka. And we'll see these stories inside over the next few days. And finally, Ashaka de Rispak, because of the side of a wagon, of a carriage, Charuv Beitar, the great city of Beitar, was destroyed. So these three things happen, and we'll stop over here because tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem, we will start the famous Kamsa Bar Kamsa Gemara, and Mitzvah Hashem, we'll have an opportunity to learn it again on Tisha B'Av. There's a minute to learn these Gemaras on Tisha B'Av. We'll have really prepared for them, hopefully well now, so when we do it on Tisha B'Av, it'll be a little easier, it'll be a Chazara. And as well, those that are interested in hearing me talk about this live on Leil Tisha B'Av, so after the Kinos are read, and after Eicha, so we'll be having a special shiur on some of these Gemaras. With that, we'll conclude today's shiur. I wish everybody a wonderful day.